The unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston, Texas, devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on listener-supported 90.1 KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Greg Audell. I serve on the board of directors of Writers in the Schools, where we teach kids to write their own stories. And I work for the law office of Pearson Grimes. I'm here with Jacob Reiner, who's helping me ring in the new year with my favorite intoxicants, chocolate bars and chocolate milk. While he's doing the work in the control room that's bringing you and I together this New Year's Eve. Normally we have guests with amazing stories to share with you. But given this unique evening, we're going to give our guests the night off, and you're going to spend 30 minutes with Jacob and I. Jacob, thank you for sharing your New Year's Eve with us. Do you have any special plans for 2016?
I am graduating from University of Houston downtown in May.
All right.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. After 14 years of graduating high school, I'm finally graduating college.
Fantastic. Well, you've done quite a bit of things in those 14 years, my friend.
Yes, yes, I have.
Done a little bit of traveling?
A lot of traveling. To Colorado and to Afghanistan. And which actually reminds me, I would like to say to everybody that is going to be shooting off fireworks tonight, please be cautious and aware of any veterans living around you, because too late at night, the sounds of fireworks sound like ammunition going off.
Wow. People say, you know, oh, I want to help the veterans. Well, you know, sometimes there are real concrete things you can
do,
like maybe not shooting off fireworks.
Absolutely.
What are any other health goals for 2016?
Well, me and my wife, Shay, are going to quit smoking.
All right. Hey, Shay, I'm glad you joined us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
All right. You're always welcome in our studios. In fact, I think we like you better than Jacob. Don't tell him I said that. Well, I'd love to hear that you're going to stop smoking. I am an anti-smoking zealot due to the fact that my father smoked about 5.5 packs of cigarettes his entire adult life.
Oh,
and
wow.
He had an early, ugly, and painful death. And I don't think anyone should be subjected to anyone else's cigarette smoke. So more power to you both. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You know what? A lot of people are going to be doing tonight. Approximately 1 billion people around the globe are going to be watching the New York Times Square ball drop this New Year's Eve. Are you one of them? Do you normally watch?
I love to watch, but I don't do the New York one.
I'd
like to do it
at
our New Year's.
All right, all right. I mean, most years I turn on the TV and I got to see the ball drop. But I had absolutely no idea where the tradition began. And it's funny because I've always enjoyed watching it, but I didn't know how it began. So I did a little research. And it turns out the New York Times started celebrating New Year's Eve in 1904. But, you know, taking off what you said about the fireworks demonstrations, the fireworks got so elaborate in Times Square that it was terrifying people. And by the third year, by 1907, the city said, yeah, you're not doing this anymore. They wouldn't give them permission. So they had to think of another way to celebrate. So we have the former owner of the New York Times, Alfred Oakes, to thank for this tradition. He commissioned a ball that was made of iron and wood to be dropped at midnight. And the dropping the ball was not anything new. It wasn't his idea. It had long been a method to help sailors determine the exact time of day from a long distance. The first time ball was installed atop England's Royal Observatory at Greenwich in 1833. The ball would drop at 1 o'clock every afternoon, allowing captains of nearby ships to precisely set their chronometers. At their peak, there were around 150 public time balls that were installed around the world, though very few still survive today. The traditions carried on in places like the U.S. Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C., where to this day a time ball descends from a flagpole at noon each day. And, of course, there's the most famous one, which a lot of us will be watching tonight on TV in New York Times Square. And as with many great American traditions, the ball itself was created by an immigrant. He designed and constructed it. His name was Jacob Starr. His ball was 5 feet in diameter. It contained 125-watt bulbs. Today's ball has over 32,000 LED lights and almost 2,700 Waterford crystal triangles. The ball has come a long way since 1907. And while this is generally a night for looking forward to the potential of the new year, as a fan of history, I'm often much more interested in looking back at stories that have long been forgotten. Because when you think you've heard everything is when you should start looking a little harder. Because I guarantee you, there are millions of stories, each with their own nuance and quirks, that you haven't heard. For example, in preparing for this show, I read in the Houston Chronicle about the death of Mrs. Anson Jones. I'm guessing you may have missed the story, even though it was featured prominently on the front page of the Chronicle. You'd be unlikely to find this edition in the local coffee shop, because it actually happened on the exact same day as the first ball drop in New York City. It was New Year's Eve, 1907. The Chronicle reported the death earlier that very day of the last First Lady of the Republic of Texas at age 86, which was quite a remarkable age back then. Today we see 86-year-olds completing marathons and skiing down mountains. Not so in 1907. And one of the things I found most striking about Mrs. Jones' obituary is that her name was not mentioned until the seventh paragraph of the story. In case you're wondering, her first name was Mary, but she lived in an era and in a place that she was seen primarily as Mrs. Anson Jones. Let that sink in for a minute, and realize that millions of women around the world today still live under such conditions. I suspect had Mary Anson not been prominent enough to merit a full page of coverage, her name may well not have been included in the story at all. Her husband Anson had served as Secretary of State under President Sam Houston, and then ran for President of Texas himself on the annexation platform. On February 19th, 1846, he replaced the Lone Star with the Stars and Stripes and uttered the impressive words, "The Republic of Texas is no more." And despite what some of our confused fellow Texans think, the Republic did indeed end that very day when we permanently joined and became a vital part of the United States of America. Though most Texans have long forgotten the names Anson and Mary Jones, we're all familiar with their family home, which was preserved and is now located on the 293-acre Washington-on-the-Brazos State Historic Site, which served as the last capital of the Republic of Texas. Both Anson and Mary Jones are buried in Houston's historic and captivating Glenwood Cemetery. If you've never been there, it is worth a special trip. Every name you see reminds you of a street or a building that you didn't really relate to being a founding family of Houston. Many folks don't even know that it's home to the mysterious Howard Hughes, a native Houstonian. I'd always wished I'd been able to visit with Howard Hughes during his lifetime. But he became a hermit and despised having his picture taken for most of his life. However, I'm still able to spend some time with him. When the film The Aviator came out in 2004, a friend and I began a New Year's Eve Day tradition of visiting Howard Hughes' grave, which is carefully hidden and difficult to see even when you were standing right in front of it. So a year ago today, I was trying to get a picture of his grave with my phone that was in perfect condition. I was very proud of that. While trying to contort my arm into a position to get a good shot, the phone inexplicably dropped from my hand, shattering the glass. Now, I'm not normally one to have butterfingers, but I simply could not hold on to it. I am absolutely convinced that Howard Hughes still doesn't like having his picture taken and broke my phone. Unfortunately, I've seen no attempt by him to pay for my new phone, but I got his message loud and clear and haven't tried to take his picture since. What do you think, Jake? You think Howard Hughes broke my phone?
I think he did.
So, Howard, if you're listening, I still would like a new phone. In looking over historic New Year's Eves, I was struck by how dramatically and quickly our world evolves. For example, it was on December 31st, 1921, when the last of the San Francisco fire horses were retired. I mean, when you imagine a fire department, it's hard to envision that a team pulling up to your home as it was burning was the sophisticated way to solve fires at the time, because prior to that, men would carry the fire equipment to a fire. So horses were seen as really cutting edge. And at the height of their use in San Francisco, there were 450 horses that belonged to the fire department that had to be fed and shoed and had veterinary services. And each one was assigned to one fireman, and they had a special bond with the horses. And so when it came time, when the city fathers started thinking, you know, this newfangled steam engine and automobile, these might be a good replacement for the horses, the public was up in arms and the firemen were up in arms. People wanted nothing to do with it. They thought the expenditure was ridiculous, which I often think is the way people react to spending on rail and trains here. And the head of the fire department, H.U. Brodenstein, was in a pickle because he knew that it was time to phase out the horses, but he couldn't get the public to go along with him. So he staged a contest between a horse and a car. And as you can imagine, that was the end of horses in San Francisco Fire Department. As a matter of fact, he said, there will never be another piece of horse-drawn apparatus purchased for San Francisco. And the win was so decisive that the public finally came around and the newspapers finally came around. And January 1st, 1922, there were no more horses in the San Francisco Fire Department. Also on January 1st, 1863 was when President Lincoln emancipated the slaves in all the slaveholding states. Now, what's interesting is in Texas, word of the slaves' freedom didn't reach us until June 19th, 1865, which is where we got Juneteenth from. I'm Greg Audell with Jake Briner, and you're listening to So What's Your Story as we wrap up 2015. It was a year that brought both global changes and local ones, such as the evolution of our program and the addition of new hosts, of whom I am very proud to be one, on listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. If you like what we do here, the guests we bring to you, and the stories we share, I'd suggest you logging on to kpft.org and supporting this program with a contribution. This is how the station gauges the level of support for our program. I believe we bring something unique to the airwaves. We are proud to have you as a listener, and we would be thrilled to have you on our team as a supporter of So What's Your Story. All it takes is one contribution to let us know and let KPFT know that you like what we're doing here. While making your list of goals for 2016, I would urge you to consider coming out to meet and hear from other storytellers and our sponsor, the best storytelling group in the state, the Houston Storytellers Guild, which has a new and very special home for 2016. The Guild is a group that keeps the art and the craft of storytelling alive. If you're interested in becoming more comfortable with public speaking or wish to improve your skill as a storyteller, join our founder and host, Dr. Hank Robichek's storytelling workshop this January 9th. Just go to HoustonStorytellers.org for more details. And Jacob's going to tell you where the Houston Storytellers group is going to be meeting and when.
Well, Greg, their monthly story swaps are on the fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Printing Museum. This is located at 1324 West Clay Street, right in the heart of Montrose. Check out all the events sponsored by the Guild and information about becoming a member at HoustonStorytellers.org.
Next week, our host, Dr. Warren Holloman, a family psychiatrist with MD Anderson Cancer Center, will be visiting with Dr. Mary Edgerton, who grew up on the Texas-Mexico border and will share stories of childhood innocence and adult betrayal. Too much of that. It promises to be a powerful and educational evening you'll not want to miss. I knew some Dr. Edgertons in Friendswood, Texas. Don't think they're related. In looking over the events of note that occurred on past New Year's Eve, I was struck by how many stunning musical events had occurred on this date. I hadn't initially planned to discuss them, but then as I was reading, I became just kind of in awe of how many events occurred on New Year's Eve. I mean, here's just a sample of what I found. Jerry Garcia and Bob Weir performed together for the first time on New Year's Eve in 1963. 16-year-old Bob Weir and another underage friend were just kind of wandering the back alleys of Palo Alto. They were looking for a club that would let him in, even though they looked even younger than 16. And they heard banjo music playing. So they followed the music to its source, and it was Dana Morgan's Music Store. Inside, a young Jerry Garcia, not surprisingly, was completely oblivious to the date. He was waiting for his music students to show up, and since it was New Year's Eve, they didn't. So Weir and Garcia started playing music together, and they played all night, and they thought, you know, we should form a band. And that was the birth of the Grateful Dead. The Beach Boys, they performed for their first paying gig on December 31st, 1961. The group was paid to deliver their soul-stirring harmonies to a live audience for the very first time at a concert held in honor of the late Ritchie Valens, who died in the plane crash with Buddy Holly. And the show was at the Long Beach Auditorium. And not only did you get the Beach Boys, but you also got Ike and Tina Turner. That is a concert I would love to have been at. And finally, on New Year's Eve in 1974, Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks attached their very floundering careers to Mick Fleetwood, John and Christy McVie, to become the Fleetwood Mac we all know and love. New Year's Eve seems like an appropriate time to focus on one of their greatest hits and the campaign song for the successful presidential campaign of baby boomer Bill Clinton. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Yesterday is gone, my friends, and very shortly, so will 2015. Focus on your tomorrows. All right, friends, thanks for indulging us for a little music. We don't often have music on our program, but hey, it's New Year's Eve. And if there's ever a time to be thinking about tomorrow, I hope whatever you're doing, you're thinking about how to make 2016 a better year for yourself and a better year for others. You're listening to a special New Year's Eve edition of 90.1 KPFT's So What's Your Story? I'm your host, Greg Audell. And if you want to hear any of our previous shows, just log on to kpft.org/archives for our last six shows, or to houstonstorytellers.org for a more comprehensive archive of our shows. You know, like every person, my life has also often seemed to be one long story. For example, when I was 12 years old, I somehow developed an unusual and challenging hobby, and I'm not really sure exactly how I decided this would be an interesting thing to do, but it took on a life of its own. I decided to meet the people that I found interesting or intriguing or, best of all, inspiring. For a few years, the best part of a concert for me didn't begin until after the last note was sung and the audience had left the venue. That was when, usually invited, not always, but usually, I was able to visit with the performer backstage, often in their dressing room. I'll be sharing some of those most memorable experiences with you during our times together in the coming weeks. One of the most fun aspects of my adventures was getting to share them with others I cared about. It was a unique gift to share with those close to me that no one else could give them. And I'm telling you, everybody needs people in their lives with whom they can look at in disbelief and ask while smiling, "Can you believe we did that?" One of my all-time favorite nights was when I was in high school. I took my mother for her birthday to see Lena Horne at Jones Hall in Houston. Now, we've all seen performers who were performing long past their prime just for the paycheck and long past their former abilities. Let me tell you, Lena Horne was not one of those performers. She was absolutely an amazing artist who genuinely only improved with age. Now, while my mother and I were backstage, two women of a certain age introduced themselves to Miss Horne, and much to my surprise and shock, said to her, "You are absolutely gorgeous. Have you ever had plastic surgery?" Without missing a beat, Lena Horne looked at them and said, "You know I haven't, but I've been thinking about it. I know Houston has the best doctors in the world. Do you have someone you can suggest?" The women beamed, and they wrote down a couple of names, and they excitedly left the room. My mother looked completely horrified, and she said, "Miss Horne, you're absolutely perfect. You do not need any plastic surgery." She answered, "Oh, honey, I know that, but those women asked me about it, so it's something they've considered, and I didn't want them to feel badly about themselves." That, ladies and gentlemen, is a class act. You know, we're going to close out tonight's show in 2015 with the late, great, and elegant Lena Horne asking, "What are you doing New Year's Eve?" Scooter's next with The Inner Side to complete the backside of the Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just taking a break from the weight of the day, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a good story, and we'll keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Till next week, I'm Greg Audell, reminding you, it is never too late to live happily ever after.
Much too early in the game. But I thought you'd ask me just the same. What are you doing New Year's? New Year's. Will hold you good and tight when it's exactly 12 o'clock. chose out of a 1,000 invitations you receive. But just in case I stand one little chance, jackpot question in advance. What are you doing, New Year's? New Year's just in case I stand one little chance, ask me that jackpot question in advance. What are you doing,
Hi, this is Hank Lamb, host of The Prison Show on 90.1 FM and Electrolove Radio Show on HD3 at kpft.org. Please take the time to go to kpft.org and click Donate Now, or you can simply go to the tip jar and make a donation to the program on the air. Your pledge there supports the main station in Houston supporting live local music and playing it on the air. KPFT also plays the best of talk and informational programming where you can get alternative views and news. I hope you'll take the time to make a pledge online at kpft.org or call 713-526-4000 to make your pledge. Thank you for supporting live music, a variety of views on issues, and KPFT, your community radio station for over 45 years. Thank you for keeping free speech alive.
KPFT, Houston.
In a nearby Rowlett suburb, Sabrina Lowe says she was luckier because of her faith. 10 relatives were at her home when the tornado threatened.
We actually went outside and started commanding the winds because God had given us authority over the winds, the airways. And we just began to command this storm not to hit our area. We spoke to the storm and said, go to unpopulated places. It did exactly what we said to do because God gave us the authority to do that.
And you will respect my authority.
Others weren't so lucky or blessed. Officials say as many as 1,000 North Texas homes were damaged or destroyed. Garland was the hardest hit. Meteorologists say a powerful tornado hit the town with winds exceeding 200 miles an hour.
Who'd win in a wrestling match, Lemmy or God?
Lemmy.
God.
Wrong, dickhead. Trick question. Lemmy is God.